Mr. Chairman, I would start by reading just a couple of lines out of a transcript of a conference call with the Director of National Intelligence and a single senior intelligence officer 6:30 p.m. last evening, which I'd like to offer the transcript of as part of the record by unanimous consent.
Without objection.
Ambassador Negroponte says, I want to convey to you that if it goes forward as proposed by the Armed Services Committee,
it being the draft bill.
That's correct, sir. That's my understanding. That this will not allow for the high-value terrorist detention program, the CIA high-value terrorist detention program that was described by the President on the 6th of September, to go forward. And then he goes on to give a more lengthy explanation. We've also, as the committee knows, had several opportunities to hear from the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who has expressed the same concerns. We have been presented with a letter signed by the top lawyers in the military, including Major General Scott Black, Rear Admiral Bruce McDonald, Major General Charles J. Dunlap, Jr., Brigadier General James C. Walker, and Colonel Ronald Reed, to the effect, and it's in the record, that they do not object to Section 6 of the administration proposal and Section 7 of the administration proposal. Indeed, and this is a quotation, indeed, we think these provisions would be helpful to our fighting men and women at war on behalf of this country. I would just point out, and I know that there were some questions raised about the content of the letter from the chief lawyers of the armed services, but referring to a transcript of the hearing that, Mr. Chairman, you convened of the Senate Armed Services Committee on July the 13th, 2006, this question was asked of the same JAG officers, and Major General Scott C. Black gave this answer. The question was, some have suggested that Congress put in statute that the prohibitions contained in Common Article 3 are identical to the prohibition against cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment contained in last year's Detainee Treatment Act. To which General Black answered, and this is an excerpt, I want to make clear, so in fairness, it is an excerpt of what he said, and others would be, I'd be happy to have them read the rest of it, but he says, nonetheless, it would be a good idea for Congress to clarify its understanding that the cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment standard of the Detainee Treatment Act was essentially the same as those provisions of Common Article 3 related to cruel treatment and outrages upon personal dignity, in particular, humiliating and degrading treatment. The way I read it, others may read it differently. The letter signed by the JAG officers, which has been made part of the record, is consistent and not inconsistent with General Black's testimony of September the 13th, 2006. My point is, Mr. Chairman, that, and I know we are striving to achieve this, perhaps in different ways, we need to give as much clarity as our human capabilities can provide, and as much assurance as our human capabilities can provide to our intelligence officers that what they are doing is, first of all, legal, that it complies with this country's laws, and it will not be subject to varying interpretations by other tribunals. One of my concerns is that the changes in the Senate bill would not be made retroactive. That's a big issue, and Senator Levin addressed that in terms of the habeas corpus review. But the changes in the Senate bill would not, as currently drafted, be made retroactive to protect our men and women who've taken actions to defend the nation over the last 5 years. And those individuals have, before the Supreme Court opinion came down, believed they were operating inconsistently with the Detainee Treatment Act, Congress's comprehensive expression on what their legal obligations were to not treat detainees in anything that might be construed as a cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment. But now a new legal standard has been created, in essence, recognized by the Supreme Court in the Hannon case. Now, some may argue, and we've heard this today, and I think it's just important to clarify the differences, because hopefully then by sharpening the differences, we can come to some middle ground or bridge some differences to achieve the goals that I have stated. Some may argue that equating Common Article 3 to the McCain Amendment waters down the provisions of the Geneva Convention. But I always believed that the McCain Amendment was what Congress determined to be, in essence, the gold standard by which all other laws would be judged when it comes to the treatment of detainees, and certainly does not water down our obligations. I think it's, I want to make sure that that my colleagues understand that by disagreeing with this aspect of the bill, I congratulate Senator McCain and those who have achieved the enactment of the Detainee Treatment Act in a way that does state what standards meet American values. In fact, we would be fortunate. Some have said that, well, the risk of not of defining our Article 3 obligations and tying that to the McCain Amendment would somehow give the opportunity to other countries to equate their common Article 3 obligations to the McCain Amendment or something else. I think we would be fortunate to have other countries tie their Geneva common Article 3 obligations of detainees, unlawful combatants, to the McCain Amendment. I think that would represent the kind of reciprocity that we would applaud, not that we would deplore. Some may argue that we're undercutting the reciprocity nature of the Geneva Convention, but the fact is, if we really want our future potential enemies to treat future American prisoners in a humane fashion, the McCain Amendment represents an appropriate standard, and we ought to be unashamed and very clear in making that application, as General Black and others have stated that it would be a good idea to do that. Now, it's standard practice, as I mentioned a moment ago in our closed session, for countries to pass enabling legislation that interpret their Geneva or treaty obligations, and that's all that I'm suggesting that we do here. Congress should define this obligation and should not leave it to the courts to define it. Now, I want to say, Mr. Chairman, you have attempted in good faith to address the concern that other courts, perhaps tribunals in Europe and elsewhere, that would have a need to interpret what the common Article 3 and outrages on personal dignity and degrading and humiliating treatment. You've attempted to address that by stating that no foreign court interpretations of that statute could be applied in determining American responsibilities under Geneva Common Article 3. I applaud that effort. I worry, though, that it will not achieve the desired goal, because as we saw in the Hamden case, Congress thought that it had achieved a particular outcome when it came to the treatment of detainees, and particularly in light of their in respect to their habeas corpus rights, and as it turned out, the Supreme Court did not agree with the arguments to uphold those provisions of the Detainee Treatment Act. And so, again, relying not on my experience as a military officer, not on my experience as a longtime member of the United States Senate, but instead relying on my 13 years of experience as a judge, I will tell you that I think we have to be very careful in trying to speculate what courts may do with this language, and that's why it's absolutely critical that we clarify it. Let me just say, and I'm wrapping up here, you'll be glad to know, but I mentioned in closed session, but I think it bears brief repeating, that the attempt to define the war crime statute in specific terms, I applaud. The problem we have with the current bill is that cruel, unusual, or inhumane treatment is left undefined in the committee draft. The President has sent a bill over that defines that as constituting severe physical abuse, at least providing a little bit more meat on the bone as to exactly what Congress intends to proscribe. and thus giving greater guidance to our intelligence officials in the Department of Justice in determining what is permissible and what is not. And the final thing I will do is come back to what the Director of National Intelligence said, is unless we provide as much clarity as we humanly can to what is permissible and what is not permissible, then who's going to bear the risk? I'm afraid that the persons who will bear that risk will be our intelligence officials, and human nature tells me that they simply, in order to protect their reputation, their career, and their families, and their personal assets, will not take that risk, and we simply will be denied the kind of intelligence that the President has said has been produced from this high-value detainee interrogation program that's been undertaken by the CIA and others. And that would, in my view, render America less secure.